Welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and I'm joined by Karen, Laura, and Kristen. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
All right, so this week we're going to discuss the return, finally, of Once Upon a Time with New York City Serenade, its first episode forever. And last week we talked a little bit about a recap of what happened in the mid-season finale. So we're just gonna move right on into discussing this episode. Of course, we can start with our favorite quotes from this episode because there were some pretty decent ones. So Karen, why don't you go ahead and start with your quote?
Sure. Yeah, there was tons of hook in this episode, which made me very happy. And my quote comes from him. It's right after Emma lets him out of jail, and he's talking about how he's been in some pretty terrible Briggs, and he goes, "None as barbaric as that. They force fed me something called baloney," and I was just cracking up.
That one was pretty funny, actually. He did have some really, he seemed well adjusted to New York City, too, actually, so it was kind of just funny. All right, Laura, what's yours?
I really liked the exchange between Regina and Snow White after they meet Robin Hood, which, you know, wild surprise, I kind of like a Robin Hood referenced quote. And I love Snow going, "He's kind of cute, huh?" And then Regina's like, "He smells like the forest." I'm like, "Oh, but you don't know yet, do you?" So I really like that one.
Yeah, mine comes at the very, very end of the episode, and it's when we get our first glimpse of the Wicked Witch. And she says, it's in regards to Regina. She's like, "She may be evil, but wicked always wins." And I just loved that. I don't know, there was something about that line that I just really enjoyed. And it was kind of a nice way to end the episode. So I can't wait to see more of her. I'm kind of really interested in the Wicked Witch. So we shall see. All right. So this episode kind of starts off where the last episode ended, with a big purple smoke monster. Shocker. And it kind of just goes from there. So we see a man on horseback kind of barreling through the enchanted forest, and it's Prince Philip going to meet Princess Aurora. And they're kind of having this very cutesy picnic. And with the cutesy picnic, the purple smoke monster arrives and everyone's brought back to the enchanted forest. So immediately Aurora recognizes Snow and David and everyone. And so they kind of sit and talk. So what did you guys think of that as the opening of the season, or the second half of the season?
I liked it. I liked seeing all of them land in the enchanted forest and kind of be like, "Oh, man." And you could tell, too, like, Snow, for as much as she wanted to go back before, she was like, "We're back." She really wasn't too happy about it. So it was interesting to just see their reactions. I thought it was a good opening.
Yeah, I did, too. I thought also on an incredibly practical level, she's back in the Enchanted Forest. They can keep dressing Snow in cloaks forever and hiding pregnancy as much as they need to in any given scene. Because Ginny Goodwin is pregnant in real life, so I was like, this is brilliant. The costuming people are not going to have a canary because she's not in, like, modern clothes. They don't have to, like, hide her behind, like, tables and things, you know, if they want to do flashback scenes and stuff like that. But I really, really liked that they all kind of plunked down right there in front of Philip and Aurora, and they're like, "Hi, we're here. Remember us?" So I thought that was pretty good.
I loved all of their costumes too, like Balefire's in this random, like, foresty enchanted forest getup. Like, we've never seen him in anything like that before, so it was kind of hilarious. I just, that and like Charming's in his bloody white shirt, and it was just great. I just kind of took me back to where they all were before they left. Like, what were they doing? Like, what were they really wearing? Like, it just cracked me up.
Poor Balefire gets the crummy beggar's robes. Everybody else is attired semi-decently, and he gets, I don't know, it looks like an old bearskin rug or something that he gets to wear.
He looks so strange. Like, it was just really weird to see him dressed like that.
Yeah, I thought it was really odd that they, when they returned to the Enchanted Forest, that they returned with, like, in their original, like, in original Enchanted Forest clothing. Like, it was just odd. The other thing I thought was really funny was, like, the dwarves were like, "Hey, we're handsome again." They were kind of excited to be back.
They're cute.
They really, really are. So right from there, we automatically cut back to New York City, and Emma comes into this dinner with a man named Walsh. And throughout the dinner, you know that they've been dating for about 8 months and, you know, all of these things. And Walsh asks Emma to marry him. And Emma's kind of hesitant. She kind of balks at the idea. In fact, she kind of gets up and runs out of the restaurant. And she says, I just need time. I just need time. And so that was kind of an interesting scene. How did you guys feel about Walsh when we first, like, see him?
I didn't trust him from the beginning.
Yeah, me either. It was bad. I was just like, you know, you're nice, but no, you're almost too nice. I don't know what it was.
Same thing. It was just, well, you know what? It's sort of, I guess part of it is that it's the show too. And you just kind of figure, oh yeah, there's evil minions everywhere. But yeah, I didn't trust him either.
Okay.
Yeah. So, too good to be true. That's for sure.
This is true. And then while Walsh goes to arrange having Emma's ring put on her dessert plate, Hook saunters in and sits down across from her again to try to talk with her. Tries to apologize for kissing her because that was the wrong approach, evidently. You just don't walk up to girls and kiss them. Way to go, Hook. Nice lesson learned. So there was that. And then he says, you need to go here. If you go here, you'll remember. You'll see. You'll know. And he gives her an address. And it happens to be Neil's old address. So that's kind of interesting. From there, we go back to the Enchanted Forest. This was kind of a back and forth episode between these two locations. So we go back to the Enchanted Forest, and we have Snow is insisting that Regina go with them and that they're all going to share the castle. That'll be their castle together. So there's kind of this really big bond forming between Snow and Regina. And Regina, while a little bit unwilling, is still kind of like, fine. I mean, she tries to be above it all, but I think part of her really needs to be around the others because she doesn't have Henry anymore. So there's that, which is super fun. So what did you guys think about that kind of section?
I'm so excited to see where Regina goes because I really don't want her to backtrack. And I kind of have a feeling that her being back, well, I guess they're not back in the Enchanted Forest anymore, but they were for a year, right? So we'll be seeing flashbacks and stuff, but it just kind of makes me worry that her being in that garb again and being in that role, like she's going to kind of revert back to the old Regina. And I really, really don't want to see that because she's come so far since the beginning of this series. And her relationship with Snow right now is kind of tentative, but it is just growing into something that I'm really excited to see. And I just need them to be best friends. I think that would be so amazing.
That's so funny, Karen.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love the Snow Regina vibe that they were actually having like civil conversations, and that they were actually having a civil conversation about Robin Hood, where like I'm like, is Snow matchmaking, like, you know, Regina, like, for real? I'm like, what's up with that? I mean, that was definitely a different thing I was not expecting.
I think I just like that Snow wasn't overly Mary Margaret-ing everything. You know what I mean? She was a little bit more Snow. And Regina wasn't just pure evil. There was this camaraderie and there was a balance between it. They kind of both got rid of their most annoying qualities and they were trying to work together, even though it was really hard because nobody wants to be back there. They've all lost so much by being back where they are. So now it's kind of learning how to deal with it and to get everybody together on the same page and to protect their kingdom, which they don't exactly know is under siege at the moment. All right. So from there, we have that kind of whole segment. And then we go back to New York. And I was really surprised at how mature Henry seemed when he's talking with Emma. Did you guys feel that way?
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yes.
He was amazing in this episode. Like, Henry has sort of been touch and go for me because sometimes he's kind of annoying and sometimes I don't think that it's just, he doesn't always serve like a good purpose in certain episodes, I think, which isn't really anything against the actor or even the writing. It's just kind of how things pan out sometimes. But this episode was amazing and he seemed so much older and the acting was so much better and I was just so excited to see him back.
Yeah, I felt like we got like high school freshman Henry. Does that make sense? I guess he's probably like I don't know if he's that old or maybe he's like, you know, middle school Henry, or I don't know, but I totally felt like that. I mean, and I know they were saying that, what was it, a year and a half of time had elapsed is the allowance. Is that correct?
No, it's 1 year.
It's 1 year. So yeah. Obviously they're you know, going to make him out to be like more mature by a year, but I really liked it. I was like, okay, I'm good with this kind of concept. Cause I just felt like he was like an early high schooler, much more than like, I'm reading my storybook, Henry.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's always the cliche that, like, the kid doesn't want his mom to marry the new guy and blah, blah, blah. I was so glad that he was just like, come on. Like, it makes you happy. Do it. Like, what's wrong? Like, that was really great. I loved that we kind of turned that cliche on its head. Like, he's happy about it.
And yeah. I love how well the two of them got along. Not that I really expected anything less, but I just really loved it when she kicked off those crazy heels that she was wearing and plopped down on the couch and started playing video games with him. It was just really nice to see them have a normal relationship, no matter how short it was.
Yeah, I think that was really cool that they did show normal, but now, unfortunately, we know that that normal could exist for them, but it isn't ever going to. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like, I think that's what was so, like, interesting about that sequence of scenes and how different everything will really be for them. Okay, so moving on, Emma decides that she needs to go check out the address that Hook gave her. And when she gets there, she realizes it's Neil's actual apartment because she sees the dream catcher. So what we kind of glimpse from this section is that Regina left Emma with the actual memories she had of Neil, and they're all bad. You know, Emma remembers being in prison. Emma remembers taking the fall for Neil. And so there's not a lot, or maybe not the prison part, but she remembers all the other parts of Neil that weren't good, that he left her. And so were you guys surprised by that, that Regina left that part of the story intact?
Well, this whole section, I was trying to figure out what parts of Neil's life, like, he remembers, like, what he would have experienced or what is just a construct for her. Like, I'm still all kinds of confused about how Neil fits into this whole we've sent everybody back and it never happened thing. So, yeah, it just was really, really confusing for me trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, he did backstab her in her life. Here still, that's how she remembers him. So apparently everything that happened up until, you know, like August showing him the typewriter, like that supposedly happened in her world,
which is again a little bit confusing.
Yeah, like it just doesn't seem to make sense,
because that's why I'm not sure if Regina left, like, gave her back those memories because they were real, so Regina just used them as the backstory for Henry's father. Like, I don't know, it was weird. Because she freaked out when she realized it was Neil's apartment. Like, she was not happy about it at all.
Yeah, that's how I feel that. I mean, because we knew before that she was mad at Neil because he did leave her. And, I mean, we know why he left her, but she didn't. And so I feel like Regina just left those memories there. And I think as the years went on, in Emma's mind, things kind of just got worse and she got even more mad at Neil. So I don't think like there was any memories added because Neil wasn't around, as far as Emma knows, for all of Henry's childhood. So there weren't memories added, but I don't think that like Regina would have added good memories either or anything. Like, she just left things as they were.
I don't know. Okay. We'll have to see. Well, we won't get any more of that, I guess, as we find out later. But anyway, we'll think about that some more. So the next thing she does is she finds Henry's camera from when they were visiting Neil in New York, or tracking Neil with Rumpelstiltskin. Henry had actually left his camera at Neil's apartment. So Emma finds the camera and freaks out. She doesn't understand why he would have it. So she goes to confront Hook in the park. And he tries to convince her again, and he offers her a potion that will help her remember. And she refuses it, and she actually has Hook arrested, which I'm not really sure what that was all about, but...
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah, she really went there. So she had him arrested, and part of me wants to think that it was a little bit of fear in her because he knows about Neil. He knows that Neil had this apartment. So there's like a connection there for her, and she's afraid of that maybe for Neil because of the Neil factor, not because of he's Hook. So she has him arrested, and that's kind of where that whole section ends until Emma goes and gets the pictures developed. But we'll get to that in a minute. So does anyone have anything on her getting Hook arrested?
I actually loved that part because this show can be super cheesy sometimes. I think we all know that. And sometimes they go in places where you just kind of have to roll your eyes. But the one thing that I really love about Emma is that she is really realistic and she doesn't just trust a stranger. I mean, you kind of expect like Hook's pleading eyes and his charm to, like, you know, get her to take this potion and to just understand everything's okay. And Emma's like, no, you're an actual crazy person. And she handcuffs him to a bench. And I think that just shows, like, how realistic this show can be sometimes, and they don't always fall into the traps of, oh, this is the fairy tale world, and if you just believe in love, everything's going to be okay. And Emma's just this really strong woman, and she's super down to earth, and she's really realistic, and I'm glad that they keep that until the evidence is literally right in front of her face, and she has no, like, other choice than to trust in Hook.
Very true. That's actually a really good point. All right, so back in the fairy tale world, we get a little bit more of Hook when he was actually there. And he kind of separates from the group pretty early on. And he is insistent that he's going to go look for the Jolly Roger. And that he says, I tried the hero thing and it didn't take. And David's really trying to convince him that he needs to stay and that, you know, he should be good because he works so hard to be good. And you could almost hear David saying that's what Emma would want, but he doesn't really kind of push it that far. But it's definitely there, I think, in what David's trying to portray to Hook. But Hook takes off. And the interesting thing about this is Hook consistently says throughout the episode, well, we don't know who did this. All we know is. And so he's clearly working or with someone, but we don't know who it is, which I think is really interesting.
Good point. I didn't think of that.
Because somebody got him the message that a curse was enacted and everyone was sent back to Storybrooke, right. But he never says who. So I have a feeling that that's important.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I kind of assumed that the Charming sent him to go find Emma, but they were pretty surprised when she showed up. So obviously that's not right.
That's a different notion. I wonder if I think that's a really good point. And I think for it to have been someone who could act autonomously like that, it clearly had to be somebody not attached to Storybrooke is sort of my feeling, since obviously everybody else was so utterly clueless. So since we're talking about the Wizard of Oz, I mean, I wonder if he's in league with, I mean, we have the witch. So do we have Dorothy or the Scarecrow or the Tin Man or the Lion? So could he possibly be in league with somebody from Oz?
Could it be Glinda? Because she was cast and she sounds very interesting. Because she's in isolation. So she could somehow be trapped in the Wicked Witch's castle and have heard it and got a message to Hook somehow.
You totally can. I totally think it's possible. I'm also just thinking only because, like, it seems like this show is, like, really loves its happily ever after, or it really loves everybody finding their true love. And we've obviously got this Hook, Emma, Neil triangle. We need another female in there eventually, I think, because obviously that's not going to constantly be that way. So I feel like they maybe would make it a female in there to, you know, shake things up a little bit, who might be helping him. I don't know.
Well, the first place my mind went was Rumpel, because we don't really know where he is. Like, we assume that he died, but we don't really know, and we didn't see a body, so it's hard to just imagine. And since he died in a Storybrooke that never existed, where does he go? Like, where what happened to him and his father, like
right.
what is
and
going
Hook,
on there.
And, so, Hook, and Hook has a potion, and who better to get one from? And yeah, that makes a lot of
then
sense.
Then Rumple. Yeah, so it's like that's where my mind went when he was kind of talking like that. But again, we have no, they didn't really give us any real clues as to who it is. It was just originally where my mind went.
Very interesting. That could possibly be it, because that kind of falls into, Neil is determined to stop by his father's place because he thinks that Rumple is still possibly alive. And if so, Rumple's the only one that could get him back to Emma. And Belle is very much on the same kind of path as that because they didn't see the dagger. So they're not convinced that he's dead forever, that they are convinced that there's a way for him to bring them back. So I think that's kind of an interesting take on it as well, you know, because Belle and Neil seemed pretty adamant that they could do this and that they were going to try no matter what. And then we have Charming, who, while Neil is convinced he's going to find his way back to Emma, Charming's trying to convince Neil to let Emma go. That, you know, we've all had to say goodbye. We need to let her go. There's nothing we can do anymore. We're stuck here. He's very kind of, he kind of takes it in stride that he's never going to see his daughter again or his grandson again, and that they're back. I think he feels much more comfortable in this, you know, in the Enchanted Forest world where he's Prince Charming rather than where he's David in Storybrooke. I don't know. Did you guys get that feeling from him?
This part really, really bothered me because he was so complacent. Like, he just gave up. He wasn't even going to look for his own daughter. The guy who says, I will always find you, that, you know, he's never going to stop looking for his wife. But the minute that, you know, oh, we can't go back to Emma, let's just not even try to find another way to do it. It just seemed really out of character for him. And I don't know if maybe something else is going on, if he just really believes everything that Regina said and is just resigned to the fact that he's never going to see Emma again. But it just really bothered me how he didn't even fight it. And he's convincing Neil to just let it go too. Like, that just doesn't seem like Prince Charming to me.
Yeah, it did seem a bit off. When you just said let it go, all I wanted to do was start singing, I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
Every time I hear the phrase, I do the same thing.
Yeah,
every time.
I didn't think about it when I was saying it, but yeah, now that you mention it, that happens to me a lot too.
So also while they're in the Enchanted Forest, Regina goes missing briefly, and Snow is very determined in this episode, unlike she has been in the past, I think, with Regina, to keep Regina close and to keep Regina kind of involved with the group and not to let her revert back to being evil. So when she goes off to find Regina, Regina's burying something. And Snow's like, what are you doing? And it's a heart, and it happens to be Regina's heart because she can't take the pain of losing Henry. And so Snow kind of convinces her that she can't just bury her heart, that it's not okay, that she has to, you know, accept the pain, and the pain will kind of ease after a while. And, you know, she gives her this speech about how she found her daughter and lost her daughter all over again, and that, you know, Regina's not the only one hurting. It was kind of a really nice moment for Snow and Regina. So what did you guys think about that?
I just thought it was the perfect reaction for Regina. That's exactly how she would handle that kind of situation. She doesn't want to feel the pain, so what's she going to do? She's going to cut out her own heart, because that's what she does. Like, I thought it was very, and it's funny to say realistic, but it is for Regina, because she's not just going to sit and, you know, and suffer through the pain like Snow and Charming would, because that's where, you know, they originally think, like, the pain makes you real and we'll get through it and we just have to, you know, keep going. That's not Regina's mindset. So I just loved that they gave her a moment where she gives into it and says, you know, I'm not going to deal with the pain anymore. I'm going to, you know, fix it the only way I know how. It just seemed very, very in character for her.
Yeah, it's Regina. Sometimes she takes, like, what I would call the easy way out on things. And it's just, you know, it's sort of like the easy way, the quick fix. And I think that was what it showed. But I do love that it showed that she's a flawed person and her mind can be changed, because I think old Regina, she would just be like, no, that's it, done, it's buried. Oh, you saw me? Well, flame ball, you're gone. So I feel like there is absolutely progress, but I really liked that scene. I thought it showed a lot of different changes with her.
My favorite part about that scene was the fact that Snow White, of all people, convinces her to take her heart back and put it back in her chest. Like, that would not have happened, I think, even a couple of episodes ago, because she was still really hardened and everything. But she is trying so hard to be a better person and to be the person that Henry has always wanted her to be. And the fact that she's still doing that without Henry right there, I think, shows a lot of her strength. But even more than that, I really loved Snow in this scene, too, because she's been so full of hatred for Regina for so long. And she could have just rolled her eyes and been like, oh, I knew Regina was going to walk off and go somewhere and screw everything up and go back to her evil queen ways. But she doesn't. She goes after her and fights her to realize that what she's doing isn't the right thing to do. So I think the two of them together, like I said, I just want them to be best friends. I think that would be so cool. But the two of them together are just really trying to meet in the middle. And it's so nice to see after all this time.
Yeah, I agree. What I think was super funny, it was right at the end of this little section of you know, kind of bonding for the two of them. We get a flying monkey!
It's true. I loved it. It was like, monkey! Yeah, that was like awesome. I'm going, yes, go monkey!
And
yeah.
They are super creepy flying monkeys, man. I was impressed with the flying monkeys. So we have this flying monkey attacking Regina and Snow. Oh, and along comes Robin Hood to save her. Wasn't that nice?
She was having none of it, though.
No, she was not. She was ready to throw some flame balls. Like, she was not having it. She's like, no, I saved myself. So she was not very nice to him, and he was kind of just like, whatever. So I think that has a lot of potential to become very interesting as maybe she tones it down a little bit and really starts to, like, get to know him. But I did enjoy that interaction between the two of them. I thought that was kind of fun. And then they kind of all go off together as a group to Snow and Regina's castle. And from there, we kind of go back to New York where Emma is. And Emma develops the pictures from the camera. And when she gets the pictures, she's absolutely freaked out because they're of nothing that they have ever seen before. There are pictures of them in Storybrooke. There's pictures from their entire trip to New York. And so Emma's has no idea what's going on. So she goes and springs Hook from prison. And they kind of have this talk about, you know, what's real and what isn't. And she decides to believe Hook. And she ends up taking the potion. So when she takes the potion, she discovers who she really is again. And she remembers Hook. And so she kind of realizes from there what she has to do, which is to save Storybrooke again. And she kind of has this speech about how her life will never be normal. And you know, it was just for that one bit of time, she was normal, and it felt normal, and she thought what she had was real. So you kind of feel a loss of Emma's kind of ignorance to it all, and you kind of feel bad. Did you guys feel bad for her at that point? Like, I did. Like, I wanted her just to be happy, but at the same time, it's really not her role.
Oh, yeah. At first, I was really happy because Emma was like, Hook, and you could tell, like, how excited he was to have the real Emma back, so that was really sweet. But then, when she said that part about, you know, I was really happy, I felt really bad for her, because she had a really good thing going. Okay, granted, the guy was a fraud, that kind of sucked, but other than that, like, her life was pretty fantastic, and she was doing well with it, and it just sucks that kind of has to come at the price of going back to Storybrooke and helping everybody.
Yeah. It's just so sad. So We'll get into this part. So Emma decides she's going to tell Walsh she can't marry him because clearly this is not who she's meant to be. So she doesn't let him in the apartment because Hook's in the apartment. So she goes up to the rooftop to talk with him, and he's kind of being weird. And then he's like, oh, Emma, I wish you hadn't have drank the potion. And she's like, hold up, say what now? Because really, how would he know? And so he does this weird thing where he kind of changes into a flying monkey. I mean, who knew?
So weird.
Yeah, I was like, holy shapeshifters, right? Batman. Like, seriously.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
I was trying to figure out who he could have been, like what character, and then all of a sudden he's a flying monkey. I'm like, you're okay. Like
going, monkey, okay.
Yeah, sure, why not?
I did not see that part coming. I mean, I thought he was evil from the beginning, and I kind of fist pumped the air when he was like, oh, I wish you didn't take that potion, because I was like, yes, I got it right. But I definitely would not have guessed he was going to be a flying monkey.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. So she kind of whacks him with a big pipe, and he goes, do you think he's dead, or do you think he just went back to wherever he came from?
Oh, I think he just flew back away. I'm not so sure that I think she wounded him, and then he...
Well, he hit the pavement and, like, disappeared.
Well, I wasn't sure that if he did the poof thing before hitting the pavement. I thought that maybe that happened, like, a split second before he hit.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
So is he an apparating flying monkey, or is he dead?
He's an apparating shape-shifting flying monkey.
There you go.
We'll have to go back and look and see if Chris Gorman is in any of their episodes, because he was the guy playing Walsh. So it'll be interesting to see if he turns up again, because I kind of liked him as Walsh, too. Like, I liked him in a role in Once Upon a Time. I, like, enjoyed seeing him there. So
right.
It'd be cool if he kind of, like, turned back up. But it would be weird because he'd have to be a monkey. I don't know. Anyway, so the last scene that we see in The Enchanted Forest is when they arrive at the palace but can't get in because there's a massive force field around it. And Regina is livid because someone has hijacked her palace. She is not having any of it, and she is threatening death to everybody. So Robin says, you know, you guys can come hang out at our place. We'll get everybody safe, and then we'll come back and address it. And that's the last we see of them in the Enchanted Forest. So then Emma and Hook kind of make a plan and set in motion the plan to go back to Storybrooke. So they drive back. It is indeed there. And Emma goes, okay, I'm going to go talk to my parents. And when she knocks on the door, she's not sure if they'll remember her or they'll know who she is or anything like that. So when she starts to say, please don't shut the door, and starts to talk to David, David's like, Emma. So they actually know. So it's different than the last curse. But at the same time, they're stuck in Storybrooke still. I'm not really sure how this is going to work. I feel like we're on, you know, curse version 2.1, and the rules are different, but nobody knows what the rules are, except for the person who placed the curse on them, and they don't know who that is either. So it'll be interesting to see how they unravel this part of it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this, to tell you the truth. Well, first of all, I didn't realize they were all back until literally she opens the door and he's there. I thought they were all still in the Enchanted Forest, so I think I was just, like, not paying attention or something. I don't know. That part confused me. But now that I know they're there, I'm kind of sad because I really wanted to see them stay in the Enchanted Forest, and I wanted maybe Emma to travel back to the Enchanted Forest or something, and I thought that this was going to be a whole new take on the show, and we were going to go in a completely different direction. I was super excited for that, but now, like you said, it feels like Curse, you know, 2.1, it kind of feels like they're rehashing the same thing, so I hope that there's enough of a twist in here to make it feel all, like, new and exciting again.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed, too, because I felt like the urgency of Hook was like, your parents are in danger, you need to come back. Like, it was, like, definitely a sense of, I felt like, oh my god, like, a dragon is going to eat them any second unless they come right, like, she comes right now. Like, I felt like it was, like, serious red alert emergency. And meanwhile, it's like, well, ho-hum, they're just kind of in Storybrooke existing. And I'm like, Oh, that didn't seem like as much of an emergency as Hook made it out to be. I mean, like, granted, it wasn't pleasant, but I don't know. It just, I really thought he was going to take her to Storybook. They were going to get some item out of, like, gold store or something, or some magical item somebody had secreted away somewhere, and then they were going back to the Enchanted Forest. It was very, very strange for me too.
I do have to say, I did get a little bit of a thrill when they drove up in the yellow bug, like into town at night when it was a throwback, and I was like, oh, like it really, it's kind of exactly the same, except they've got Hook in the car this time. So I did like that. But yeah, the whole Storybrooke them, thing, it's all very confusing.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed that they're back in Storybrooke. I'm hoping because they have to tell the story of a year's worth of time, because we know that they've been gone a year. And the reason we know is because Snow's like bursting and pregnant. Started out there. Which conveniently works for the story that needs to be told and the real life story that needs to be told. So hey, it's all good. They don't really have to hide that pregnancy bump not so well under the big white cape she had rocking in the Enchanted Forest. So, I mean, so maybe what we'll have in the episodes is their time in the Enchanted Forest with just a like an intro being in Storybrooke kind of thing. I mean, I don't know. That's a lot of story to tell. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's a lot to tell because they don't remember. The last thing they remember is when they said goodbye to Emma. They don't remember being in the Enchanted Forest.
Which is super interesting, and I am really excited to see that year that they were in the forest because they all know who they were and in both worlds, and they're kind of trying to like reestablish their life. I think there's a lot of interesting story to tell, but I'm just kind of bummed at the same time that we're back where we started, and like I said, I hope they can put a twist on it.
Well, the other thing I thought was a little strange too was well, maybe not, maybe because they don't really know the outside world, but the fact that like Emma had to go and find them, and it didn't seem to me like they were actively trying to find her. Like,
But did they think they couldn't leave again?
that's what I was wondering. So, do they feel like they can't go over that's what I was curious. So, they can't go over the line. Do they not know how to use, I don't know, directory assistance or the internet, or they can't? Like, I don't know. I was just starting to wonder what was up with all that. But then again, we gave Henry a camera that had real film in it that had to be developed, and I don't think anyone's done that in a long time either. So I don't know. Maybe it's just one of those things.
That
Maybe.
makes me kind of take another look at Hook, though. Like, why was he able to get out? Who sent him after them? Because he's always been sort of in the gray area, and I'd really, really love to believe that he's on their side now. But with all this going on, you kind of have to wonder if maybe he has another agenda.
But if he was on the Jolly Roger, because remember, he went to find his ship, he wasn't with them.
Right.
So maybe, and because we don't know what his deal is, what world he really belongs in, we don't know if the curse would have affected him.
Yeah.
Okay, true. Yeah, let's go with that because I like good Hook.
I
Or at
mean,
least not 100% bad
yeah,
Hook.
I was just gonna say, I wouldn't know that I'd give him that much credit, but yeah, exactly. I mean, he's kind of team I want to get in Emma's pants, and this is how I'm doing it, so.
Oh, poor Hook. He always gets such a bad rap. Okay, so at the very end of the episode, we get one little bitty glimpse of the inhabitants of the castle that was once Regina and Snow's. And it is definitely the Wicked Witch of the West, green and all. And she had her monkey attack Regina for a reason. She needed Regina's blood. So I think it's probably safe to assume that she needed the blood to create the curse to send them all back. That would be my guess.
Sounds likely.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're left until next week. I didn't see the preview for next week because we watched it on a trailer. Huh? Anyway, yeah. So we can't really talk about that.
There we go.
We'll cut all that out. It's fine. So that, do you guys have anything else to discuss for this episode of Once Upon a Time?
What did you guys think of the Wicked Witch now that we've, like, actually seen her? Like, looks-wise, how do you feel about her?
It was kind of so brief, I didn't think too much about it. I mean, my only thought was, man, she's really green. That's got to be uncomfortable. But other than that, that's kind of as far as I got with it.
For me, it's weird because she has blonde hair. It throws me off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That still gets me. The blonde hair gets me. It just, there's something about it that doesn't feel right. And so I'm not going to be okay until they address it somehow.
I've seen Wicked a bunch of times and all I can see is the dark hair and the green skin. And that's what we're, no. But yeah, I wonder if she's maybe they're going to play it so that she's like Glinda's sister because Glinda's blonde. So,
that's what I was thinking. Like, yeah. Somehow they're related or something, because Glinda has to be blonde. So, yeah.
Well, you never know. She might have the black hair in this one. Who knows?
That would be weird.
Maybe they'll switch at one point. That would be weird. I liked her costuming a lot. I'm not crazy about the green skin. I think it's really kind of startling. But her hat and her dress and everything I thought looked really cool. But I always love the costumes on the show.
Very true. All right, so that wraps up our Once Upon a Time discussion, and we're going to move into the Once Upon a Time in Wonderland discussion. And this came back after a really long hiatus. So we'll just jump right into it. When we last saw them, Will had just been turned into the genie. Cyrus was released, and the bottle went flying off into a river or stream, and the Red Queen, Alice, and Cyrus were left to try and figure out where Will could be. So, do you guys have some quotes for this one? Because I have one for this episode.
I think the one you have is pretty much going to be everyone's favorite, although I do have a second one.
All right, so my quote is from Will, and he says, "I'd prefer to take my chances with the homicidal maniac with the snake stick," in regards to Jafar over the Red Queen.
I'm probably the only one that felt bad for her, but that was a slap in the face.
You are very soft-hearted when it comes to the Red Queen, Karen.
I don't understand it. I don't know why, but I really liked her in this episode too, even though she was a brat a couple of times. But I think I just have like so much hope that she's going to turn out to be this really awesome person, and maybe I'm just being naive, but I can dream.
I keep rooting for Team Will Dumper, sorry ass. Like, seriously, I'm just so... I was so PO'd when Liz bought it. I was like, really? Really? Like, I was like, no! Yeah.
We're not to that part of the episode yet, Laura.
I know. I'm jumping ahead. I know. Yeah, the only quotes, I guess, I just love Will's variations on the theme of bloody hell. I want to know if we've kept a tally how many times Will has said bloody hell, you know, since he started. That would be interesting.
I think at one point he said bollocks and I just like burst out laughing because he's just, his timing is fantastic. It's always so funny.
The only other quote that I really liked came from the Red Queen, which is surprising. Although I'm with you, Karen, a little bit. I did like her better in this episode for some reason. I don't know. It's weird. I found her at least tolerable. But she said, "You two are even more insufferable together. Do you know that?" Like, she was talking to Cyrus and Alice, like, when they were in the little, I forget what it's called, the little invisible hideaway thing. And it just cracked me up because they are kind of insufferable. Like, I feel for her in that instance.
Nah. Anyway, so we get to see Will right off the bat and see that he is rescued by Lizard. If you guys remember, Lizard was in the episode when Will was turned to stone. So she finds him and she's like, "What are you doing?" And it's then that Will realizes that he is the genie of the lamp. And he has to kind of give the spiel of, "I will grant you three wishes, master," that whole little spiel he does. And he is so not happy about it. because he says it one way, like he's forced to say it, and then as soon as he's done saying it, he's like, oh, blah, blah. Like, he just is so not cool and down with being somebody, like having someone be his master.
I love the little perky face he gets too when he's like, yes. Like he turns into this little automaton when he has to say it, and it's like, oh my god, it's perky wind up toy Will. It's hilarious. So.
I vote for a TV show that's just nothing but the Knave.
It would probably do very well.
Yes.
I would. Maybe the Knave and Hook. I could see that.
Oh.
I'd watch that show.
Yeah.
A new bromance is starting.
Just them going on adventures. I could totally see it.
Bring the Knave back to Robin Hood and clear the air there, boy. Let that work. That'd be cool.
All right, so once Will is found, he and Lizard kind of try to decide what they're going to do when he gives her her three wishes. Then we have Alice, the Red Queen, and Cyrus kind of hanging out, and Alice wants nothing to do with the Red Queen. I mean, and by nothing, I mean she wants to, like, leave her on her own and, like, just never have to deal with her again. Alice is very suspicious, and she does not like being around her, and she's very concerned about Will, which is, you know, rightfully so. Will's now a genie in a bottle, which never ends well. So from there, we kind of see them set off to try and find Will. And as they're kind of doing this, Alice and Cyrus are talking, and they turned around, and the Red Queen is gone. And they think that she's just run off. They have no idea what you know, where she's going. And so it just kind of enhances Alice's need or distrust of the Red Queen. But unfortunately for the Red Queen, she was actually snatched by peasants and robbed of all her fine jewelry and then tied to a stake to be left out for the wild animals that come out only at night. And when Alice and Cyrus kind of see this has happened, Alice is like, leave her. We don't need to help her. She's on her own. This is what she deserves. And Cyrus is like, oh no, but Alice, we must be kind, and gives one of his ridiculous spiels about that. And so they try to help her, and that lasts a hot 5 seconds, and they also end up tied to the stakes. So what did you guys think about that whole series of events?
I was just like, how did they fall for that? Like, how did they get... I was just like, I was disappointed that Alice and Cyrus managed to get themselves captured. I was like, really, guys? Come on, skill set, you're better than this.
Well, yeah, it seemed really silly for them to, like, march in there and try and save her, you know, with all of these people standing around. Like, why not just hang out in the shadows and see what happens? Like, it didn't look like they were going to execute her or something, like, on site. They could have waited and saved her before the animals got her. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, it didn't seem like their smartest move. Which was sad. So in order for them to escape, evidently these weird animals with glowy eyes are attracted to the light. That's why there's a ring of fire around them. They're not actually burning them at the stake like witches. And then Alice has the necklace on, which is glowing red. And we've never really seen it do that before, except for when she needed to know if Cyrus was alive. But other than that, I don't recall it ever glowing red. Do you guys recall it glowing red ever before?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, so it seems like a really odd time for it to start to glow. So Cyrus tells her, take off the necklace. We have to get rid of the necklace. And so Alice manages to get a hand free and throws the necklace. And she's very upset by this because this was the first kind of thing that Cyrus's. And that's what kind of has been with her all along on this journey. So it was hard for her to give it up. But they do manage to escape, and off they go to find Will. Will is back with Lizard, and she gives Will one of her first wishes, one of her, you know, one of three, and says, wish for whatever you would like. So Will wishes for ale for the entire village that they're in so they can, you know, all go have a nice drink. And he's kind of enjoying, I think, being the... you know, the genie and being able to grant wishes and being able to have things. So that was kind of an interesting look at what he would wish for. What did you guys think of seeing Will in the genie role?
I was like, he thinks that this is all fun and games. Like, he's going to learn a pretty hard lesson soon, and He did, and it was sad.
Yeah, Will is so independent, so to see Will in a position where he is kind of the puppet on a string is really, really kind of sad, exactly.
Yeah, but he was okay with Lizard, I think, as his master, because she was never gonna do anything that was going to harm him, kind of thing. Like, she was his friend, or, you know, maybe more. I don't know, it was really hard to watch, because Lizard then is kind of like, well, she gets really mushy about things, and he says, oh, you should go out and have a good time, there's probably a guy out there that likes you, and she's like, well, no, this guy will never like me, and it's just kind of sobs her, and you feel really bad, and you know instantly that she is talking about Will. Will, on the other hand, needs right. to be, like, hit by a Mack truck, because, well, he's a boy, and this is how it works. So he tells her all these amazing things about what he would want and look for in a girl, and he basically gives her all those things, including the fireworks, which was really, it was so sweet, and it was really cool. So there's that set of wishes. But when she tells him that, you know, he's the boy, that's why she doesn't want to leave, Will doesn't know what to do, because don't forget, Will still doesn't have his heart, right?
Right, correct. Yeah. But it was, I was curious, though, if he then got it back or got the ability to feel without the heart, because she said, I just wanted you to feel something about me. So, I mean, and we all know how that worked out. So I was curious if he got his heart back or just emotion back.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as we move forward. So it is unfortunate. Lizard does make a wish that she didn't think through carefully, and we get to see kind of the full consequences of, you know, hasty wishes. Lizard wishes that Will would just feel something for her, and in doing so, she dies so that he feels sad, which is so unfortunate and so painful. So because that's Lizard's third wish, Will is sent back into the bottle. And of course, the person that walks in next to pick up the bottle isn't who I think anyone would want it to be, except for maybe Karen.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right.
Perfectly clear. I actually do not want the Red Queen and Will to get together, but I do kind of like the Red Queen, but I don't want them together.
All right. In the meantime, Jafar is working his evil plan to still get that last genie bottle. He's very adamant that he needs that third genie. So he's seeking the Red Queen, whom he believes has it. And now she actually
does.
Story change, unlike before. So Jafar enlists the help of the Jabberwocky. Now, from the original stories of Alice in Wonderland, the Jabberwocky was not a person, correct? It was like a hideous beast. And a weird poem.
Yeah, like every incarnation I've ever seen or like read about was always some sort of like dragonish creature or something really big and scary. Like when it turned out to be a human or person shaped thing, it kind of weirded me out.
Yeah,
I was really surprised, but I really like it. I think that it's such a cool twist, and this is one of the things that Once Upon a Time does so well, is they take something you feel like you know, and they just, you know, throw it on its head. And I think whoever the woman is playing the Jabberwocky is just so creepy, and I think she's going to be a really cool addition to the show. Although, when I looked at her, like, all I could think of was her hair was like Christina Aguilera circa 2000, and now I just can't get that image out of my head.
Well, when she, like, leapt off the wall and did, like she stretched kind of like a cat, it was so cool. I was like, that's really awesome. Like, so I'm kind of wondering if maybe she can take multiple forms or something. Like, maybe this is just, you know, how she chooses to interact with humans or whatever. But it was really cool. She is definitely going to be a really great addition, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So when Jafar goes down to release the Jabberwocky, they're, like, dead white corpses kind of littering the floor, which is always nice to see. And then he speaks with the Jabberwocky, and she says, look up, because she's actually tacked to the ceiling with a dagger. Did that dagger look familiar to anybody? Okay, maybe it was just me.
I noticed is that it was shaped like a lightning bolt or something. Like, it wasn't like a normal dagger. Like, it was kind of weird.
Yeah, I didn't hone in on it too much, so I didn't.
It looked a little bit like a Darkling dagger. That's why I asked, because it looks similar to Rumpelstiltskin's.
I was thinking that too when I first saw it, but I think the one that Jafar pulled out of her was much larger.
Right, but it still looks very similar to a Darkling dagger, so I'm wondering if a Jabberwocky and a Darkling are similar in some way.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. So he releases her, and she seems to be able to manipulate minds. Like, that's her big thing, is mind manipulation, because she immediately shows Jafar who's boss by exposing him to his deepest, darkest fears, even though he says he has none. And his deepest, darkest fear was that his father tried to drown him. So I thought that was really interesting. And I hope Jafar realizes he has zero control over this Jabberwocky. Like, he may think he's in charge, but he is not.
Oh, I think he realized it pretty quickly, which I'm glad. Somebody needs to put him in his place. But that kind of worries me about the Jabberwocky, because she must have a lot of power, and she's pretty crazy from what we've seen so far. And I think Jafar, at least you kind of know what he wants up front. She's sort of like the wild card, so it's going to be interesting to see what she does.
Very true. So that was kind of what we got from the Jabberwocky. And then we go back to Ellis, Cyrus, and the Red Queen see the fireworks, and they realize that the only way that people could be having fireworks like that would be if someone had wished them. So they're pretty sure that they have actually found where Will is. So the three of them split up to find the bottle, and in the end, the Red Queen finds the bottle. She hasn't rubbed the lamp yet, so the Will is still inside, and still, he could be master to anybody. So when Cyrus goes to take it from her so that he can be the master of the genie, she rubs the lamp and releases Will. So the Red Queen is now Will's master, which there are so many things wrong with that on so many levels, but it does make me laugh. It really kind of does.
But she stayed, and she wanted to fight.
I don't know.
nobody's coming to my defense. Okay.
I just want Duck Lips to die. I've just had it.
No.
I just felt really bad for Will, because I was like, this has to suck. Like, you just lost Lizard, and now the Red Queen is your master. Like, oh, this is going to be amazing.
Well, I think that's why I so much don't like her. I feel like she could just sit there and say, I'm going to let you free on the third wish, or I'm going to give you your freedom, or it seems to me like she could do so many things, and she just, to me, seems like she's still choosing it to be all about her. And I guess that's why I still dislike her so much.
Yeah, it's still there. I don't know. Because she clearly didn't need to be the one that was the master of the genie.
Who cares? Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that was a little bit more into the character that we don't like about her. I will say, at least she's not talking with that, like, ridiculous affected accent-y thing that she was doing before. Like, I am grateful that she's talking more, like, when we see her as Anastasia, she's kind of going back into that pattern, and I liked that version of this character, not the Red Queen version. So, fingers crossed that we start to move back to that, in that direction more and more. So, Will is not impressed by this turn of events in any way, shape, or form, and he actually tells her off, which I thought was really interesting, because he did not hold back on what he was saying to her.
Yeah, no, not at all. And she didn't, like, deny it. Like, it's just, but I felt like she wasn't, like, learning from it, or, like, really, like, that effective and wanting to repent for it. I was just like, no, you're still selfish and like, you know, I felt like it almost like even the village's words didn't really have that much of a dent in her at all. So I don't know. I guess that's why I still really, really dislike her very much.
Yeah. So as they're talking, the Red Queen's like, we gotta go, we're out, let's find the rabbit, let's wish out of here, let's get out of Wonderland before Jafar finds us, because Jafar wants the bottle. And as she's explaining this, she starts to mention the other bottles, and Cyrus automatically gets very concerned, because this is the first time we've really learned that Cyrus's brothers are all genies. The three of them were condemned to the bottles, and so there are three genies that are related, and it just so happens that the other two bottles that Jafar has are his brothers. Which should be interesting, because are those genies still alive? Like, how does that work? Like, what is that about?
Well, I assume that they're still in the bottles, that he's master of them, but is not using his wishes until he has all three or something, because he needs all three. Well, he says bottles, but I think he needs all three genies in order to use the spell that he wants, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just assumed, I mean, it's, I doubt he's collecting trinkets. I mean, I'm sure the genies must be in the bottles, because he wouldn't just keep them otherwise, right?
Well, I would hope not, but one never knows with Jafar. So, what happens is Cyrus is like, we have to stay. I have to save my brothers. So Alice agrees to stay. And the Red Queen is kind of like, no, we're going. And then Will has a go at her. And they kind of decide that, okay, maybe, you know, we'll stay. We'll fight. You know, and she agrees. And she's very passionate about, like, fighting. She's like, it's the fight for Wonderland. And she's very determined about this, which is the first time we've actually seen her determined about something that wasn't really about her.
It makes me wonder if what the peasants said did have some sort of sway over her, because she says something along the lines of, you know, I'm the queen, like, I need to be there for the people or something like that. And I thought that line was particularly interesting, like, maybe she's taking her duties more seriously now.
Maybe. I mean, she did say something about, like, she wasn't a very good queen for the kingdom, and now she has to change that. So, hopefully we will see a move from her towards the better, but I don't know. So, that was pretty much where the episode ended, was the four of them agreeing that they would save Cyrus's brothers. So, what did you guys think overall about this episode? Is it better than the ones from, you know, before the mid-season break, or is this still kind of on this course of not really sure about it?
I wasn't too excited about this one. I will say that I kind of like the fact that Alice and Cyrus are a little hesitant around each other. They don't really know how to act, and they're not exactly where they were before, which makes a lot of sense to me, because they've been apart for so long and they've been fighting to find each other, that now that they're together, they're like, what do we do now? So I think that's an interesting take on where their relationship is going. But I think it's unfortunate in a way that this show and these characters have to be in Wonderland, because Wonderland is so ridiculous that it makes this show kind of hard to really get into, because it's so over the top sometimes. And you can't really avoid that when you're talking about Wonderland. I mean, it is a ridiculous place. It was written that way. And a lot of the quality that we get from Once Upon a Time just does not translate over to the show. And I'm trying so hard to really fall in love with it. And I think there are different aspects that I really do like. But overall, even after all this time, it's still really not doing a lot for me.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of down to characters, not the episode, because I would say, generally speaking, in the episodes, I'm sort of, like, kind of ho-hum about it. I mean, I do want to know how it all works out in the end, but I'm ho-hum. But there are things that I really do like. Like, I loved all the scenes between Lizard and Will, and I was morbidly upset when she died. I really like Alice as a character as she drives the action. Interestingly enough, I'm not particularly fond of Alice and Cyrus together. I know that's weird. I just, maybe it's the same vibe you were talking about, Karen. I just feel like I've been told to, you know, I've been told so much that they're like everything to each other, and I'm just not feeling it now. And then the rest just kind of falls flat on me. And even some of the new introductions, like I loved conceptually the idea of the Jabberwocky coming in, but when they showed us what the Jabberwocky was, I didn't mind it being like a human or humanoid person, but I got completely distracted by that bad blonde wig. And I was just going, oh my God, that is the worst wig I have ever seen in my life. And I was like so bamboozled by the wig, it was hard for me to sort of enjoy the show. So I'm kind of up and down about it.
Yeah, I'd have to say I'm kind of the same way. Like, I have my moments where I'm really invested, and then things happen that I just get really, like, bored with. Like, you know, it's Wonderland, so this can happen. Oh, okay, sure. But I will say I really do like Alice and Will, I mean, which I think is kind of the consensus. Like, everyone seems to like them. I am not very fond of this Cyrus. Like, seeing him, you know, on his own last season, I really liked him. I was really interested in finding out more about him, but his like constant insistence that, you know, Alice has to give the Red Queen a chance, and I don't know how many times in this episode he had to correct her and, like, you know, tell her, like, we have to save her, we have to help her. It was like over and over again. It just got really old really fast. So I'm hoping that Cyrus, something will happen and Cyrus will kind of stop being Mr. Goody-goody, we have to do the right thing at all times. Like, hopefully something will happen where he has to kind of face reality a little bit.
I think kind of towards the end of the episode he did a little bit, because he said, oh yeah, we should have left her to the peasants when she pulled the trick with Will and became the genie's master. So, but I feel pretty much the same way that you guys described. I don't know if I had high expectations because of Once Upon a Time or what it was, but I just, it doesn't feel quite right to me as a show just yet. So it'll be interesting to see where it ends up at the end of this second set of episodes. So do you guys have anything else for this episode? Well, that pretty much wraps up this episode of Onceable. So as always, you guys can leave your comments and questions, thoughts, predictions in the comment section of the episode, and we will share listener feedback for the next time. So thank you guys for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.